I think the most fascinating part of this piece, in a certain sense, is the way he begins, which I'm going to have to paraphrase for the sake of time, because we will have no chance to get it all done inside. But his basic premise of the piece is to question the very need and the significance of the holiday of Chanukah, or the miracle that we famously associate with Chanukah. Of course, we know the Gemara asks, "My Chanukah?" And the answer the Gemara gives is a resounding and very famous recounting of the story of the Nes Pach Shemen. And Revolbi, in the first paragraph or so, basically takes aim at that narrative that we've all grown up with, that the premise and the purpose of the holiday is to commemorate that miracle. And if I could summarize everything that he says in very technical and very yeshivisha terms, he basically says, big whoop. It's a yeshivisha term. You didn't know that? Yes. What's the big deal? In other words, as he points out, miracle in the Beis HaMikdash, that happens all the time. Perkei Avos said there were 10 miracles every day in the Beis HaMikdash. So all of a sudden now there's a slightly different miracle. What's the big deal? There are miracles throughout Tanakh. He goes on, again, it's a little bit esoteric, a slightly bit esoteric. He talks about Adam HaRishon, Korma Chet. But he basically says there was a time in the world before nature, Adam HaRishon, Korma Chet. Okay, once nature came, so we usually don't break the laws. However, he points out, we see from the fact that there were miracles every day in the Beis HaMikdash, that's kind of an island in time, if you will. The Beis HaMikdash is a physical location that represents a time primordial, even before Adam HaRishon, Adam Korma Chet, and therefore the fact that there are miracles there is in general not a surprising or an impressive thing. Moreover, he points out at various Nevi'im, you know, who are themselves embodiments of that level, so they also could have miracles. So it can't be, he says, that we're just having a holiday because of the miracle. In the Beis HaMikdash, that wouldn't necessarily impress us. Rather, he says, it must be for something else. And therefore, the premise of everything is built on a comment. If you take a look, if you have the PDF, it's towards the bottom of the first page. He quotes from the Bach, one of the great commentaries on the tour, one of the great poskim from Poland, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis, who in his commentary there on the tour, the Bach quotes from the Maharami Rutenberg. The Maharami Rutenberg, of course, is one of the Gedolei Rishone Ashkenaz, Rebbe of the Rosh, Rebbe of the Mordechai, and the Maharami Rutenberg, you see again, it's the bottom of that first page that you have in your printout, and this is a long quote from the Bach, but I think it's worth to do most of it inside. And the Bach is basically entertaining, or starting with a question, which some of you may be familiar with this idea. I think it's more well known, at least to me, typically it's more well known, as a comment that the Mishneh Berurah brings down in the name of the Levush, which is, what's the difference between Purim and Chanukah? How come, again, notwithstanding the fact that we do like to eat on Chanukah too, but there's actually no mitzvah to eat on Chanukah. There's a Purim Suda. One of the four mitzvahs of Purim is a Suda. Physical celebration and enjoyment is an integral part of Purim. There is no, we paskin, there is no such thing as Suda's Purim as a halachic requirement. Now again, Suda's Chanukah, excuse me. Now again, Baruch Hashem, do not lose faith in the Yidden. Even though there was no chiyuv, Minhagim made sure to compensate. As I say, we eat plenty and we have special foods that we eat. But the celebration is different. So the question is, why should that be? Okay, so what he quotes here from the Maharami Rutenberg, I don't know if it's exactly the way the Levush brings down, but this is a famous question. And the answer is that it goes to the heart of the difference between the miracles of Chanukah versus the miracles of Purim. In each case, the threat was different, the miracle was different, and therefore the celebration is different. So with that background in mind, take a look inside. B'Purim, Ikur HaGzeira HaYisa Lefisha Nehenu Misudas HaShal HaShverish. According to the Gemara, the instigator, or at least the straw that broke the camel's back, in which the Jewish people were punished, is that they went to the Suda, the lavish, hedonistic, multi-day orgy fest of eating and other things that Achashverosh made that Suda, and the Jewish people went inappropriately and enjoyed that. Al-Kain, says the Maharam at Rumenberg, Nigzru Alein Laharu Glaavit Esha Gufim, Shenenu Me'achila V'shtia Shel Isser. Because the sin was a physical sin, therefore the punishment was a physical punishment. You overindulged in physical pleasure. As a result, your body was physically threatened. Haman wants to kill the Jewish people. And then, Kishasu Tshuva is brilliant. Every step fits in like a puzzle. So when they did the Tshuva, what was one of the critical parts of the Tshuva? When Esther says, Lech Krosa Yudim, everyone should fast. So they realize their mistake, overindulgence in physical pleasures. A key part in bringing the miracle in the Yeshua is to take a step back and to have a little bit of an ascetic perspective, to go to the other extreme, that they shouldn't be able to overindulge. They went to the other extreme. As a result, says the Maharam, Lefichach, fourth line, Kavam Lemishta, V'simcha V'yom Tov Lizkor Iker Hanes. So because everything in the story on some deeper level revolves around physicality, initially overindulging, they get punished. Then part of the tshuva process is to rectify that. Therefore, when we celebrate, commemorate for all generations, so we incorporate in a kedushadik way, hopefully this is not the Purim Shmuz now, but hopefully in a kedushadik way, we incorporate a physical celebration. That's Purim, okay? Now that's the introduction. Now comes the part for us. Aval b'chanukah, ikar ha'gzeira ha'isa, al shetirashulu ba'avoda. This is interesting. Now we don't have time. Time does not permit to try to investigate what the source of this is, even before the Maharam. But says the Maharam in Rutenberg, what was the sin that led to Hashem allowing the Greeks to have that window of success? That the Jewish people had gotten a little lazy and a little lackadaisical, a little weak in their service of the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, the Beis, again, we don't think of it in these terms because it's not the primary part of the story. But before the Xeris of the Yevanim, there was an active, vibrant Beis HaMikdash. At some point, says the Maharam Rutenberg, they started slacking off in the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. That was the particular sin that sparked Hashem's anger. Al-Kain, Haisa HaGzeira Levatlam Hem HaAvodah. And one of the Xeros, it wasn't the only one, but one of the Xeros that the Greeks made was focusing specifically on the Beis HaMikdash, as the Brisa says, Gazer Aleihem Levatl HaTamid. They weren't allowed to bring the carbon tamid, which is the most often brought and most consistent carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, twice every single day, and sometimes an extra day, an extra carbon on certain special days. Furthermore, here the Maharam Rutenberg is quoting from the perspective of the Greeks. Amar Le, they said to each other, to themselves, Mitzvah achas yesh miyadon. There's one other mitzvah the Jewish people have. Ematem mevatlin osa miyadam. If we can get them to stop that, hey mavudim, then they'll be completely lost. Beza, what's that one mitzvah the Jewish people were still keeping? Hadlakas hamenorah. And therefore, it continues, the Greeks understood, kozman shemadlikin osa tamid hein omdim. As long as the Jewish people are at least doing the menorah every day, we're not going to be able to totally defeat them. Amdu, as a result, the Greeks did what? Timu kalashmanim. So that's step two. So the sin was that they were weak in the Beis HaMikdash. The punishment therefore took the form of the Greeks attacking the Beis HaMikdash and threatening, not their physical bodies, everything about this holiday was a spiritual one. Ukashechazru b'tshuva, and when that small minority of Jews, the Chashmonaim, had the revolt and they did tshuva, what was the tshuva for? How did they do that? Limsor nafsham ala avoda. It wasn't the type of fasting that we had in Purim. That wasn't the Mesiras Nefesh. It was Mesiras Nefesh for, we want to reclaim the Beis HaMikdash. Redeem the Beis HaMikdash. Metire the Beis HaMikdash. Metire the oil. Get back to how it was in the Beis HaMikdash. As a result, and he adds an extra little knetch about Hanukkah, which fits beautifully in this puzzle, in this pattern that he's developing. Who were the instruments of the miracle? Ayde HaKohanim. Of the Avodah Beis HaMikdash. It's not a coincidence that the Chashmonaim, the instruments of the Yeshua and Chanukah, were Kohanim, because everything in its deep origins revolved around the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, what was the miracle that we end up celebrating? Al Kei Nasa Neskam Beneros. Tachas Sheiro Haro Navsham Lamus Al Kim HaVodah. Because the Jewish people were willing to risk their lives, their Moser Nefesh, on what? To redeem the Beis HaMikdash, to get it back to the way it was, to want to have it on the most beautiful way, with the most tar oil, etc. Lefichach lo kavam ella lahodos ulahalel. The celebration of Chanukah, unlike Purim, is not a physical based one. It's not there's a mitzvah of Suda every day. That's just our minhag. But there's no mitzvah of Suda's Chanukah. There is a mitzvah of Suda's Purim. So that was a physical sin, a physical punishment, a physical threat, a physical Yeshua, a physical celebration. But Chanukah, everything is on the more intellectual or spiritual realm. And therefore, here's key words that we're going to get to, come back to at the end of the piece. Avolbi picks up on, and this is astounding. I never noticed this before, but this is what I double checked it last night in the original. This is what the Bach quotes from the Maharam. As a result, unlike the Chanukah, which was Purim, which was more physical, Chanukah was Lahodos Lahalel Shehi Ha'avodah Shebalev. Not an external physical celebration, but work on ourselves on the inside, an inner spiritual celebration. So you turn over the page, says Avolbi, Panim Chadashos Reinu Kan. This is a nice poetic way of saying, What a chiddush. This is a new insight. This is a paradigm shift. This is something that we didn't previously know. But we now have a pattern. We have to understand this, not only about Hanukkah, but we can apply this in many ways. Gzeros eino bos bli siba. You have to understand, if God forbid things happen that are negative, we're threatened, it's not random, it's not arbitrary. Hagzera ba mida keneged mida. God runs the world, we know, in a way that is mida keneged mida. You sinned in one way, Hashem will punish you in another, in that same way. You do tshuva in that way, the salvation will come in a similar way. Skipping to the end of that paragraph. Ukasher kohanim masram nafsham al havoda. Miyad ro shuv nisim. Hein b'milchamtam. Masru gebarim b'yad kaloshim. As well as in the return of the avoda, the neis b'pach shemen. So because they had gotten weak, they weren't really being moser nefesh, they weren't really passionate, they weren't really focusing with all their energies, even pushing themselves to the nth degree in their avoda, initially, that was the predicate. That's what led to Hashem being upset. That's what led to the gzeros. And what type of gzeros were they? Specifically focusing on the spiritual life in general, and specifically focusing on the Beis Hamikdash of the Jewish people. As a result, what was the tshuva? The spiritual tshuva? One which, in general, and one specifically focusing on reclaiming, elevating, liberating the Beis Hamikdash and being moser nefesh, not hitrashlut, you know, weakening, lazy, kind of going through the motions Judaism, but mesiras nefesh, passionate, committed, specifically when it came to the Beis Hamikdash. We'll skip the next two paragraphs where he makes the broader point that now that you have this kind of paradigm of historiography, how history works on the metaphysical, on the meta-historical level. Again, there are all sorts of ways Hashem works in different levels. It's not a stira to get a PhD in history or political science and understand economic causes and military causes. Those things may all be true. Sometimes they're speculative. Sometimes the academics don't know as much as they think. But even if they really, really have it down, that's on one. Yeah, that's on the Derech HaTeva level. And Hanami, Hashem works on a different level. But on the ultimate meta-physical and meta-historical level, we believe that there are spiritual causes for these things, right? World War II didn't happen because of an assassination. World War I, excuse me, right? If you want to know historically or politically why it happened, because so-and-so assassinated so-and-so. And why did World War II happen? Because the Germans were still upset, right? Those all may be true facts. But up in Shemayim, the question is, what? Right? Just because people are doing things doesn't mean Hashem allows those to be successful, right? Purim is the most famous one. People, you know, Haman almost got this close to annihilating the Jewish people. It got even closer, you could say, in a certain sense, than Hitler. Oh, the two of them. Who else got so close to annihilating the entire Jewish people? So the Mefarshim were constantly asking, not why did Haman hate us, or why did he want to kill us? That's one question. But why did Hashem let him get so close? It must be because there was a certain sin. So similar, that's our way of looking at all of history. Which in one way, you know, in a certain sense, is a way above us. Another, it's very empowering. Right? It's a tremendous responsibility. It's very empowering. In other words, we shouldn't think that we're completely passive, you know, like driftwood just floating along, and Nebuch, we have to hope that the wind blows the right way for us. It sometimes seems that way. But from a spiritual perspective, if we have a more elevated way of looking at the world, we realize, no, it's all Biyad Hashem, and we have, again, we can't always understand the Hashem's ways, but we have the basic formula for how we can hopefully, push the right buttons so that Hashem treats us in the way that we hope to. And when we don't, it's not just that he gets upset at us. It's very, very specific, that mida keneged mida. Okay, so now let's do the second part of the piece to finish. So he says this premise, this idea that he was trying to develop, that we see in Hanukkah, because of this particular weakening and kind of laziness or lackadaisical approach, they were suffering. It was only when they were moser nefesh, they were willing to risk it all and push themselves to the brink, that they merited the miracles. He points out that this formula, the mesiras nefesh, pushing yourself, can bring tremendous salvation. So this is actually the basis of a part of an incredible Gemara, Masechta Brachos on Daf Chaf, here in the middle of the page. And the story is amazing. You could imagine, I don't know if the rest of the Gemara would play out in our day, but you could easily imagine the conversation happening in our day. This is a conversation happening in the time of Amoraim. Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye. Maishna Rishonim de Mesrachash L'Hunisa, Maishna Anon de Lo Mesrachash L'Hunisa. Right, and they're in the time of Abaye, Rav Papa, they didn't have miracles like the good old days. Right? Didn't we always wonder? Every one of you must have had a child or two or three or all of them at some point who asked, Abba, how come we don't have, Mommy, how come we don't have miracles like they had in the, I asked that when I was younger. My kids, I think, all at one point asked me that kind of question. It was already Abaye and Rav Papa discussing this. And they say, here, and I don't know if we can say this about ourselves, but maybe, in some level, you want to say because maybe they learned more than us? He goes through line by line. What are you talking about? The learning, he says, in our generation is greater than it used to be. You know, and on some level you could say that now, right? When in history was there a yeshiva as big as Lakewood right now? As big as the Mir? Oh, the Hezri, there's more, it's true, more people learning now, right? But we don't have the Nisim. It's exactly what's going on with our Papa Nabai. He says, you say it's learning? We learn better. We learn more than them. We knew Tahar. Anyway, all and on and on. So obviously that must not be. And yet they had miracles and we don't. So he says, I'll tell you very simple. Because they were Moser Nefesh. Amar Lei, towards the end of the paragraph of the Gemara, Kamai, Hava Kamaser Nafshayu Akirush Hashem. They were willing to give it all, put it all on the line. They were willing to be Moser Nefesh. They had more commitment. They had more heart. Anan, Lo Masrina Nafshin Akirush Hashem. And then tells a story, an amazing story, not about giving up your life when someone's going to point a gun at you. About someone, it turns out, the PS to the story is he made a mistake. But it talks about a certain person who saw what he thought was a Jewish woman walking around in an unsanua way, and he was very critical of her. Turns out that, in fact, it was a non-Jewish woman. He made a mistake. But the point was, he was willing to risk himself. It was not exactly a polite thing or politically correct thing to do even then. He could have gotten in trouble from the authorities. But in the end, because he felt that mutual responsibility with Jews and tochacha was so important, he was willing to do that. Okay? In the end, it didn't work out so well for him because he got the wrong person. Okay, but the point is, and here's the key. Let's see the next paragraph. He quotes from his Rebbe, Adonai Rabbeinu, for him is Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, the famous Shkiach. Says he explained, you see in this Gemara, they're not talking about Mesiras HaNefesh that you have to give up your life on the big three of Eros. For sure, that's not something so special. And this is a comment I've seen, I heard this from many Gedolim. I think of Aaron Soloveitchik used to make this point. As much as we think that's incredible, wow, you give up your life. He says, there's no Jew who wouldn't do such a thing. Again, in the abstract, in advance, we can't imagine it. But in the moment, the Nazi puts the gun to your head, or says, look throughout Jewish history. Wait, only the greatest, only Yehuda HaMakabi, only Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's, only the greatest Gedolim died on Kiddush Hashem? Says, wait, our history is filled with the most simple Yidden, often very far from Frumkeit. But at that moment, they said, I'm a Jew, I'm going to be Moser Nefesh. I'm not taking away from them. The point is that we don't feel it on a day-to-day basis, but that willingness, if it would really come to that, in that rare, rare situation, in theory, any one of us could have. That's not the Mesiras Nefesh that's being talked about in this Gemara. So he says, rather, what is going on here? It's a very interesting term, and it's very important to think about. He says, what's the definition? Hare Rav Ada Bar Ava, that's the one at the end of the story who got it wrong about the Tznius issue, but he was Maser Nafsho Atochacha. What does that mean, Mesiras Nefesh? Laleches Bavodas Hashem, Ad kitze gvul kochos ha-nefesh ba-adam. Shia kochos ha-adam ba-avoda v'fo'al gamor. Mesiras nefesh means pushing yourself to the max in whatever that situation needs. Pushing yourself, passionate, committed, taking yourself all the way to the limit. That was what it means. To give your all. Kishmo keinu, it's the words. Be moser nefesh. Figuratively, it could mean giving up your life in a rare circumstance. But 99% of the time, it doesn't mean giving up your life. It means giving your all, giving everything you have for the mitzvah. Not just lazy, you know, half asleep, walking in, you know, with the coffee in one hand, the newspaper in the other hand, you know, schmoozing with seven guys, schmying around, and eventually you put on the tefillin or, you know, davening Shabbos chakras. Right? That's not serious nefesh on anyone's definition. But when you're tired, you know, but going, doing the right thing, and even when you're tired, even when it's hard, and even on Erev Shabbos Chanukah, it's busy in a short day, but no, we have a chabura, we come. That's Mesiras Nefesh. I'm not saying it's the greatest Mesiras Nefesh you hear. Don't give yourself too much credit. Abyssal, yes. Yes, it is a little bit. It is a little bit. There might even be a few people who said, I'm too busy, I can't come today. Okay, so you guys met the test. You're here. That's Mesiras Nefesh, he says. And then as a result, he says, that's why Mesiras Nefesh can be zocha to real miracles. Why? Kashir ha'adam minatzel kol ha'kochos sheyeshtem lo b'teva arakatzeh. If you push yourself, you summon all of your ability to do whatever it is that needs to be done. Again, it can be your commitment, right? Again, each of us as father or as grandfather, right? In a subtle level, right? The fact that you work all the time and you're hard, right? Do you want to provide for your kids? Or if, God forbid, there'll be an emergency and you need to do something for your children, right? We all have that in us. And we do it. If we're normal parents, if we're normal grandparents, of course we do it. So too, he says, that if we could take harnessing that koach towards Hashem, that's what Mesiras Nefesh is. And when we push ourselves to the limit, but once we've done all that we can do naturally, we've used all of our energy, all of our effort. So then, one step beyond that, you push yourself right beyond that, that's when you're zocha to Nisim. Because what is Nisim? Nisim are above Teva. When we push ourselves to the max of our teva, of what we can naturally do, then we're right there. We're kissing. We're right there. We're touching Hashem, because He's right lamala min ha-teva. Umishin min ha-tzel kol ma shenitein lo b'teva, zocha lamala min ha-teva. The hainu hanes. Now, I want to just conclude so we can wrap it up, so you understand what we're talking about in the next few minutes. And we'll skip again. Obviously, when we skip, we're missing gems. Every paragraph here is a gem. But it's a longer piece, and I want to let you go in 2 or 3 minutes. So let's just skip now to the last paragraph of the whole thing. So what's the message we're supposed to take? The message to end where we started, right? What was the question? Why do we have to have Chanukah? Because there's a miracle in the Beis HaMikdash. There were a lot of miracles in the Beis HaMikdash. 10 of them every day. That was his question. That's how we started, right? Using the very academic and yeshivish term, big whoop. Right? What's the big deal? So the answer was, again, it's not the miracle per se. But rather, it was the fact that the Chashmonaim were moser nefesh. To some extent, they even risked their physical lives. But the point he says here, the deeper message, wasn't that they risked their physical lives. It's that they understood that to be an engaged, powerful Jew, a person has to give everything they have. And originally, they were kind of lackadaisical, going through the motions of the Beis HaMikdash. And part of the tikkun and the tshuva was a willingness to push themselves to the max, to do it with all their koach, with all their passion, to be the best that they could be. So he says here, what do we learn from this? Last paragraph, we conclude. Kama aleinu hitchazek b'yemei Chanukah davka. He says, chas v'sholem, to just waste these days just, playing dreidel or just in vacation. I'm not against dreidel or vacation. But that can't be all of what Chanukah is. Rather, nitchazek b'avodas Hashem b'chizuk rav. We have to take chizuk, we have to strengthen ourselves with this message. Habach, the one we've been focusing on, his teaching, in the name of the Marami Rutenberg, what were they teaching us? That Chanukah Tiknu, Shmoni Yomim Lahalo Lahoda, Shehi Avoda Shebelev. That's the key emphasis, right? Unlike Purim, where it's more of a physical celebration, here it's Avoda Shebelev. That's where we have to be mechazak ourselves. Tzarech Lahatchil, Avoda Shebelev. This is, if you remember the first time we met, 2 months ago, whatever it was, the first Gemara, this is the first premise of the whole book. Inside out, not outside in. Right? It's true that the more mitzvahs you do, it can impact, that subtly impacts you. That's outside in. But the premise of the book, and therefore I guess the premise of this chabura, is that at least a little bit, at least 20 minutes a week, we have to work inside out. Focus on the inside, focus on our heart, focus on our mind, getting that right, and our perspective on life, and then that will impact outwards. Says the Ravolbi, what the whole premise of this whole book is very much crystallized in the holiday of Chanukah, the way Marami Rutenberg says it. Because the avoda is avoda shebelev. Namely, rak ba'avoda zu, mitbarer la'adam b'mashu tzarech le'chazek. Only if you work, again, l'havdil is why people meditate or other things, and I'm not against meditation necessarily, but it has to have a spiritual component from our perspective. But the point is, by focusing on the inner self, thinking about yourself, working on yourself on the inside, then you'll figure out which external things you need work on. Right, what you need to work on and where you want to push yourself is not necessarily where I need to, or I need to push myself. Right? But only by first working, right? The Shulchan Aruch, the external stuff, that's the same for all of us. I mean, okay, maybe you're a Kohen and you live in Israel and you're a man, right? There are a few things, those every now and then there are differences. But basically the mitzvahs are totally equal. They don't discriminate. That's for all of us. But the avodah shebelev, the inner work, the work of the heart, every one of us are different. And I would add, at different stages of our life, we're different. The same avodah that I needed when I was 20 is not the same avodah I need when I'm 40. It's not the same avodah which I'll need when I'm 50, and hopefully not when I'm 80 and 90. Right? Every stage of life is different. Ha'osa zost mechag ha'kodesh. So if a person could combine that approach to life, of taking time to think and to work on themselves, where can I put more emphasis? Where can I be better? Where can I be more passionate? Dafka on Chanukah, yikach mimenu chizuk l'kol yimos hashana mamish. Mamish, bezos Hashem. Hopefully if we can harness, that's the magical power, that's the message of Chanukah. So if we use the time of Chanukah, the inspiration of the lights, to think a little bit more deeply about who we are, where we want to be, what we want to do, with whatever time we have, whatever resources we have. Where can I put my emphasis? Where can I put my focus? Where can I be better? Where can I be stronger? Dafka in the time of Chanukah, then hopefully not only will we have a meaningful Chanukah, but hopefully that should be a catalyst for the entire year. Chanukah Sameach.